My name is Victoria Clark Jones, and I am a life coach, mental health coach for kids and teens and parents.
Can you tell me a little bit about your own mental health journey?
Sure. So, it's kind of been a process, but really my more into kind of focused mental health journey started about 4 years ago after I moved to the US. So, before that, I lived in China and I was a teacher. I had two boys growing up, who were growing up, and I moved to the US and I remarried and I became a stepmom. So a little, I don't know how much time we have, a little bit about my
Oh,
past
we have
is that
plenty.
I, plenty of time. Okay, perfect. A little bit about my past is I was born and raised in a religious cult called the Children of God. So there's a lot of information about it online. I try not to go into too much detail because it could literally take up an entire session. So with that came a lot of conditioning, a lot of religious brainwashing, control, very high coercion group. What I was taught growing up was that the world was going to end very soon. I probably wasn't going to get to be an adult. We were going to be raptured and Jesus is going to come back by the time I was going to be in my teens. We grew up in very large groups or communes, a couple hundred people sometimes. Children were often separated from their parents. That's what happened to me and my two siblings. I'm the second of seven siblings, so grew up in a big, big family. Most of the families around us also had anywhere from 7 to 13 kids. It was a very evangelical, apocalyptic kind of group that was their teaching and their message. And children were kind of used as, we were taught that we were child, basically soldiers for God, and exploited a lot and sent out. We weren't given much of an education. So it was kind of a very tricky environment growing up. Now, I left the cult when I was 17. So basically around the time I started to rebel and just like, this is not for me. This was my parents' idea. And I grew up and left the cult on my own at 17, with my then boyfriend, who also grew up in the cult with me. And we married when I was 19, he was 20. So that was kind of, you know, I thought I'd gotten out and that was basically it. I was free to live life on my own, but not realizing that everything that I grew up with, all the conditioning, all the messaging I got growing up, really impacted me, who I was, my ideas, my beliefs, how I saw the world, how I saw relationships, my trust in people. So my first marriage ended after a year, not very, you know, it wasn't very long. It was very, very, again, kind of reminiscent of the cult, very highly controlled, very coercive, a lot of abuse there. I kind of got out of that very quickly, realized that it wasn't a good place for me, and jumped right back into another relationship that also wasn't the best for me at the time, but I thought better than the one I was in. And so I ended up staying in that relationship for probably 11 years, kind of petered out towards the end, but 11 years altogether. And I had two boys with their dad. And it was kind of as my boys started getting a little older, my oldest especially, that I really struggled with what am I doing as a parent? I am actually repeating a lot of these same patterns. Now, I didn't know there were patterns at the time. It was just my relationship with my oldest isn't working. He's starting to pull away from me. I thought I was a good mom. What was I doing wrong? Right? I was unconsciously repeating very similar patterns to how I was raised, very authoritarian, strict, no questions asked, just do as you're told. Don't talk about your feelings. You know, feelings are what we were taught growing up, like they're any negative feelings were bad. So you shouldn't voice them. They were of the devil. Now I didn't go that far with my own kids, but I just knew that when children being children when children were being children and showing all their emotions, it made me very uncomfortable and I didn't know how to deal with those emotions. So I kind of, you know, patched things over, but it didn't go too well with my oldest. Anyway, at the time I was also separating from my kid's dad, and There was a lot of, it's a very high conflict separation. We weren't married. And I think it was my oldest son telling me, "Mom, I don't want to live with you anymore. I don't feel heard by you. You don't, it doesn't feel like you care about me." And to me, that was a huge shock because I was like, "What are you talking about? I'm a good mom." And so to hear my son say, and he was only 10 at the time, he was like, "No, mom, I want to go live with dad. I don't want to live with you." And there were other, there was some outside control going on there. He was getting messaging as well. But I think, excuse me, I finally, it got to a point where I was in so much pain because I eventually ended up losing custody of him that I was like, I have to do something different. And of course, that, when you're stuck and you don't really know what to do, I was like, well, maybe I just read a couple of self-help books and some parenting books or take this course. And I thought that if I just learned skills, that would, make everything better. And I also moved to the US around that time with my youngest. So we relocated. I started my life all over again. I got remarried and I became a stepmom to three kids. Now they were, I think the oldest was only about 14 at the time. And so all of a sudden I was a mom of teenagers and stepmom. And I didn't know, again, I was just like, oh, come on. Like, I know I'm good with kids because I'm a teacher and the kids love me. With my own kids, I'm struggling, but I'm kind of getting the hang of it. And then boom, stepmom, three kids, figure it out. And any step parent knows that that's a very different dynamic. So it felt like I was being tested again and I didn't have the tools. I was like, what am I doing? And so I think the real catalyst I can remember is just calling my mom. It was during, I think, COVID time, like 2020, calling my mom on the phone. And I was like, what, mom, what am I doing? I don't know. I was just crying. And I was like, I know so much about kids, but why am I struggling so much? And I was like, you know what? There's got to be, I don't want to spend, hundreds of thousands of dollars on therapy, but I think that's what me and my family need. But at the same time, there's got to be stuff out there that I can just learn. And then I remember just Googling online about different skills. And I came across a counseling, so a helping professional counseling course. And I was like, okay, if I learn some of these skills, these listening skills, and helping professional skills, I'm going to be a better mom to my kids because I'm going to be able to basically be their therapist. That was my idea. And it wasn't until I started learning these skills that something about, well, the course was very, you learn these skills, but first you got to practice them on yourself. That's what I loved about that course. And I realized as I'm doing all these exercises that no one did any of this stuff for me. All these things that I'm trying to learn, no one provided that to me. I don't know how to provide it for myself. Shoot, maybe I really do need therapy. Maybe I really do need to go back and heal all of these things that I saw were coming up in me. And that was, I think, the beginning of my mental health journey where it was really intense. I was just learning a lot of skills myself, but also practicing them on myself. And then I've been in therapy now for 3.5 years. It's been really hard, but such a beautiful journey. And yeah, that's kind of also what inspired me to once I started doing the work on myself. And then I was able to provide that for my kids, that sympathetic ear, that just holding that space because I was able to do it for myself first. And I was like, why do we wait as adults to get therapy, to get help after we have all this damage? Why don't we start with children? And that's why I was like, you know what? I already have a background in working with kids. I want to teach kids these skills that they don't learn in school. And so that's why I became a mental health coach for kids and teens.
That actually brings up my next question of, there's so much going on when you're a kid and teen, and how important is it to bring in mental health tools and all that early on?
Oh, so important. I think the world is gradually coming around to the idea that, oh, we can be preventative in this. We can start early. It doesn't have to be after. I was just talking about it with my sister yesterday, we don't have to wait until we're adults and we have all this damage and all this patterning and all this ingrained that's so difficult to undo. We're rewiring the brain. Why not just wire it right in the first place, or wire it with tools that when you kind of start to go, everyday life, you have emotions, you have your beliefs about it, your self-talk, your stories. Why not give kids tools to be able to overcome the challenges rather than wait until they're adults and have to heal from the challenges? So I would say I teach parents as early as basically as soon as their kids can talk and be verbal, start teaching them these skills. And as a parent, even our before our kids are verbal, when they're pre-verbal, we can create the conditions. But this takes work on the parents' part to really regulate themselves, to learn these skills for themselves so that they can give it to their kids, because it's very difficult to give someone something you don't have yourself.
I know for me, I was diagnosed with bipolar disorder too when I was 37. I'm 42 now. So, growing up from childhood to 37, I didn't know what was wrong with me and all that. And my family didn't know either. So, how important is it for the family to understand all of this for their child?
Wow, so important. And I one of the things I do see that it's I think it's a little bit of maybe a lack of knowledge about how the environment really impacts kids, right? And when I first started working, I was like, okay, I'm just going to work with kids. I only want to work with kids, right? I was like, I don't really want to work with adults. It's gonna might trigger some stuff in me, and it's gonna require more skills, right? I was like, kids are good. I've got that background. I feel comfortable around kids. And so for a year, I just worked with kids. And then I got a lot of parents coming to me saying, hey, can you work with my teens as well? This is when we see the problems really, really coming up, right? And I was like, oh, yes. Okay. So I expanded my practice and I got training to work with teens. And then I was like, you know what? It's no good these kids coming to me for an hour a week and I talk with them, we work through all their issues, or they talk about their issues and unload. And then we learn some tools. And then they say to me, Miss Victoria, it's great that I can do this and I can talk about this here with you. But when I go home, I can't talk to my parents. I can't, these tools that you're teaching me, I can't put them into practice. What if I tell my mom that I'm sad? She just tells me to go to my room. Or if I tell my dad I'm angry, he yells at me, tells me to, or if I try to set boundaries with my parents and saying I'm a little bit uncomfortable, they say, override them. Just tell them I'm a child and I need to do what I'm told. And so I started realizing that it's no good. You put a flower outside in the sun for an hour a week and then you put it back in a dark room the rest of the time. It's not going to grow. The environment is so important for kids. And this is why I started to work with teachers at school, because I realized that that's also a big part of environment. It's like a collective. We can't just work on one part and expect a child to flourish. We need to work on it. It's a community. And this is why I talk about it's a team effort. Right. And it needs support from, laws and legislations need to be focused on what is in the child's best interest. I know there's a lot said, but when I go into schools, when I see the support or lack of support for parents, there really isn't a whole lot of support. People feel so, what I hear from parents is so isolated. And there seems to be a lot of help out there, but it's not really. It doesn't feel focused enough or maybe educational enough in a way. It's a little bit, there's a problem here, let's slap a band-aid on it and just keep going, right? There's not really a whole very holistic approach to this kind of support that parents and teachers and children can receive. So I think it's so important. It always starts with the home, because we as parents were our children's first advocates, right? So yeah.
What have you learned from your own kids?
Oh, so much. They continue, as I said, both my own kids and my clients, they I think are they're my best teachers, because I can go back and do therapy and work on myself, as a child, but where it comes into action, that what called where the rubber hits the road, is when it comes to my own kids. Because it's great, I can sit there and think about all the tools that I'm going to use. And then my child says, no, mom, I don't want to do that. You do the dishes. I want to play my video games. And then I'm like, oh, right? Oh, now it's time to put into practice what I've been teaching other parents, what I've been talking about on my trainings. And I see so much of myself mirrored in my kids. And I think that's a lot of it of I can relate to you because I remember being that age. And I can remember going through struggles, and I can remember not having anyone to talk to about it, not feeling safe to talk to my parents, finding, friends who were not healthy, or, finding coping mechanisms that were very dangerous, actually. And I don't want that for my kids. So in a way, they challenge me to be better and to be the kind of parent that I wished I had as a kid, or the adult that I wished I had as a kid growing up.
What do you do to help your own mental health?
I do therapy, so that is my time. I dedicate a whole day to it because some of the stuff I go into is really deep, and it takes sometimes it takes a process afterwards of, just being a bit gentle with myself after some really hard sessions to nourish my mind. Not that that's my mind part, but my body. So sometimes it means taking a lot of rest, taking naps during that day, making good food, exercising, moving my body. That's a big thing that I find people, now that we know that trauma lives in the body, and sometimes we just go and, intellectualize and do everything on a cognitive level, and we totally neglect the body. So I find that body-based movement and attending to it. So I'm also a dance instructor, and that's part of my giving back to the community, but it also gives back to me, right? Community with others, dancing, moving your body, especially as women, we carry a lot of trauma in like our hips. So I do a lot of Latin dance, and so that for me, I feel is really helpful. And I spend a lot of time talking with my husband and just processing stuff that I'm learning and sharing it with him. And I feel like all of it is, my own therapy, taking care of my body, taking those practices that I learn in therapy and integrating them throughout my day, movement, spending time with loved ones, spending time with safe people as well. And so sometimes it means setting boundaries and cutting certain people out of my life, or setting boundaries with them when I know it's going to be a drain on my mental health and I just don't have the energy for that. So it looks like a lot of things across the board, but yeah, and obviously I'm still adding to my toolkit and learning new things, and I'm always interested of in so I'm learning a bit of Chinese traditional medicine. I do massage, I do dance, I do yoga. Yeah, there's so many tools out there. I think, like, why just stick to one? There's so much.
Do you see kids and teens being more open to share their feelings than adults?
Yes and no. I think some kids learn very quickly that it's not safe, right? And that was me as a kid. Learned very quickly that when I share my feelings, when I show emotion, I get punished. Or saw other people, for example, my sister got punished very, very harshly, very badly. And I was like, I don't want that to happen to me. I'm going to shut down. I'm going to pretend. So I think it depends on the child. Ironically, the safer the child feels, the worse they're going to behave sometimes, because that's their true self, their messiness. I know moms tell me, why does my child act the worst with me? They come home and they just have, they've been so great in school all day. I get wonderful reports from their teachers, and they come home and they have a meltdown on the sofa and they're talking back to me. They don't want to do anything. Why? And I'm like, believe it or not, that's actually a good thing. That shows that they feel safe with you, right? Because somebody who feels like they have to be perfect all the time and doesn't looks like a good child. And I say, compliant. Don't show their emotions, do all the right things, follow directions, and seem very, very put together. We talk about parentified children, right? Children who had to grow up too fast. They had to take care of everybody else's feelings that they never had time to feel and process their own, right? And that's not healthy for a child. So I encourage parents, of course, there's a spectrum, right? If they're too far off and they're just being disruptive and defiant all the time, that's not good. But showing their messiness, showing their emotions, and I think feeling safe to express and say, you know, today I had a really hard day, or I'm really angry right now. I don't want to do that. That is healthy. As long as there is some resolution there, right? They're not just, like I said, stuck in the angry feeling or sad or defiant or, you know, always getting into fights. There's the feeling, and then there's some resolution afterwards, or the adult or parent helps them to move to resolution afterwards. But some adults are so open, they're just basically ready, right? But I think there is a lot of stigma around vulnerability, sharing stuff about mental health. Even though it is becoming more accepted in social media, there's also, I think it's not just a matter of talking about your feelings and mental health issues. There's also this feeling of doing it on the spot and really having to work through it or taking accountability for it, right? And we always talk about how what happened to you growing up as a child wasn't your fault, but now as an adult, it is your responsibility to heal. And sometimes it's like, I didn't ask for all this stuff. I shouldn't have to heal from it. But it is your responsibility as an adult, right? So I find that once adults feel like it's okay and they have permission to be vulnerable and open about what they're going through and that there is support out there and that there are other people out there like them, I think it's the feeling of not being alone. Right. And that's why I think the Me Too movement was so popular. The Me Too, it happened to me too. I need help too. There are other people I can receive support. So I think once adults are shown, of course, they've got so many more decades of evidence that showing this kind of stuff is not safe. But once they finally feel safe with a person who allows them to feel their emotions and not judge them for it, then you find it's almost like a snowball effect and they'll open up more. And so I think adults need that as well. They need just somebody safe and a safe place. That's why it doesn't necessarily even have to be a therapist. Sometimes just support groups, right? We're talking about AA meetings and things like that. A support group of people who are just there to listen and not judge. I feel like adults will open up, but for a lot of people, it's not their default, right? They have this wall up, this defense, because when they talk about this in the past, they're, you know, if we're a certain generation, it's like, oh, you don't talk about your feelings. Just stiff upper lip, right? Just suck it up, buttercup. And it's I think people are gradually realizing that they can talk about this kind of stuff and it's going to be okay, right? Other people do it too. And I think social media is really good for that, is that you see a lot of people sharing and it's like, oh, they did it and it's okay, right? So
How does helping other help your own healing process?
talk about it as like kind of a knock-on effect, or it's just this chain of events of I love giving back to others what I learn myself, because and I believe that's what humans love, right? And who was it? I think it was Adam Grant that I watched this video from, and he said that the best way to help others, or the best way to help yourself or to learn something yourself to make sure you really know it, is to teach it to others, because then it's not just theoretical for you, it's practical, right? You have to understand what you're talking about. I believe that the best teachers are the ones who, or the best, I guess, coaches or educators are the ones who've actually lived it themselves. And they're not just, this isn't just something out of a book. They actually know what they're talking about. And I know this works because I've done it in my own life, right? And I think that that's a part of authenticity and congruence, is of, I know this works and I can. I'm not going to tell you something that I won't do myself. So some of the stuff that I come up with either with children I work with or my own kids or sometimes the adults I work with, it reminds me of something in myself. Or what I find is if I find myself being triggered by it and I can't understand, why did that bother me so much? Why did when the kids say that, it bothered me? It triggered something in me. Okay, there's something there I need to explore. And so, you know, I said this to my sister the other day, that children are the compass that show us where we need our healing. And so sometimes we have layers and layers of stuff, and it's sometimes, you know, really suppressed, or maybe sometimes in our unconscious or subconscious, we don't realize we have it there. And then someone says something or someone does something, and you're like, why did that bother me so much? And I being curious, taking this curious attitude has really helped me start to uncover stuff that I thought like, oh, I dealt with that already, or I thought I processed that, and it turns out I hadn't. And so it always gives me good content or whatever it's like to bring into therapy. This happened, and I want to explore why, right? And then we uncover there's some unhealed wound there, and I hadn't even thought about it on a conscious level, but subconsciously I was like, that really bothered me for some reason. Or this person is really irking me. I saw something on social media, and it's really bothering me. Why? And we dig a little bit, and I find out why. There's some unhealed wound there. There's some messaging or some belief there that I have about myself. So that's another reason why I love the work I do. I'm like, it's this, they're helping me heal, right? I'm helping them, but they're also helping me.
So where do you want to see your mission, say, in the next 3 to 5 years?
Oh, I would love to see schools across the board. Now, I know there are some schools who are already implementing this, and there are some programs out there. I know there is a wonderful grassroots program that's kind of coming up. It's an online children's mental health app that they meet with coaches, and it's very it's fun and engaging. And there are coaches out there like me, children's mental health coaches who are working with kids from a young age. So I know there is a lot starting, but what I would really like to see is just incorporated on a, you know, in schools that teachers are getting this kind of training and language. A lot of it is also trauma informed because after COVID, a lot of these kids, what we're seeing is they have symptoms of trauma, right? We went through trauma as a collective, and we're seeing a lot of the symptoms come out in schools, and there's not a lot of training or support for the individual kids, right? So I would love to see just a program started as young as kindergarten in schools, teaching about mental health, teaching about emotional regulation, emotional intelligence, understanding how to use this kind of language in classrooms, right? That I believe that that would make a huge difference. But also, I would love to see there is a lot of support for parents out there already, actually. There really is. But I would love to see more focus towards children, preventative health care, preventative mental health, and teaching kids, young kids, these tools, whether or not it's through schools or whether or not it's through trainings that parents can take and teach their kids at home. So yeah, that's my mission is I've started in schools now. It used to be just me from my little home office here, just working with one-on-one, but I'm like, there's a lot that kids can learn in schools as well. So I'd love to see that in the next 3 to 5 years.